But it is possible, to a certain extent, to find out from what the person does or says. Perfect unselfishness is a mark of intuition. The intellect often works as an instrument of the ego, but it is difficult to know. The intellect does not work by itself. It is acted upon by the self or Atman. The intellect can grasp external things, but it cannot turn back and grasp its own source divine. With a pair of tongs, you can hold material objects, but the tongs cannot catch the hands which hold it. Similarly, the intellect cannot grasp God or self, the higher power behind it. The best use of intellect is to help us to know its own limitations. Merely reading books on Vedanta and getting intellectually equipped with the ideas related to the highest attainment cannot make one a true Vedantin. Learning is both a help and a hindrance. It is a hindrance if one feeds one's ego sense and makes one pose as a person who has realized truth. God realization means experience of God. For this, humility is essential. Too much learning makes one proud. One must bend one's head to Him, realizing the limitations of reason. It can only take you to the gate. It has to be left behind when you enter the realm of spirit. You have to unlearn what you have learnt. Become as simple and guileless as a child. This is a beautiful discussion by Papa around intuition and reasoning. Definitely, we use reasoning in this world and help us to negotiate and navigate through this world. If we have to sit down and balance our checkbook, we must use the reasoning mind in order to do this. But what Papa refers to here is the higher mind that is known through intuition. Reason means that the mind takes in information and it sorts through that information and it decides what is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong, what is the proper course to go. And it does it in reference to its own experience and to the things that have happened to it in this world has helped to shape and guide the intellect. People have various levels of intellect. Some people have what's called a high IQ, an intelligent quotient. But that is just part of what makes up intelligence. It is the ability to memorize. It is the ability to reason and to digest and understand certain amounts of information. But there are people who have a lower level of intelligent quotients who actually have a better source of knowing what is right in a situation. And that is because that individual has a greater purity of intellect. The greater the purity of intellect, the more intuition is able to inform it as to the right thing to do. In the beginning, intuition comes as that John the Baptist. It is that feeling down in your gut, down in your solar plexus. It is fabled that good policemen have gut intuition. They get something that they know is on the right track, or they feel like something is off track. And this is a development of that. Certainly they take in information and clues, but there is something deeper, something more profound, and the really good ones have it. Because the mind is always going to be limited. It cannot know all. The only one, the only thing that may be able to know all is what we call God, because God is all. And therefore God is present in every particle of space. And you might ask, well, how is that possible? Space, the world, the universe, and beyond are so vast. But you might ask yourself, how do I know what sensations are coming to me from my body? If I wiggle my big toe may think it's an independent actor, and that it has nothing to do with the rest of the body, but the body, the mind, knows that the big toe is part of it. It sends information, and so it is part of you, and you are part of it. And while the big toe or your index finger or any other part of you may claim its own independence, it truly has none. It cannot be independent. It can wiggle itself if it wants to. But ultimately, it is accountable to the body and a part of the body. And in the same way, you are part of God. And God knows you, even though if you do not know God. And God is aware of you, aware of your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, your everything. That is why we can't hide anything from God. We can think that we can hide things from this world. We can do wrong action and then try to cover that wrong action up. But the moment you do that wrong action, God knows it, and God is part of it. And you might say, well, why doesn't he stop me from doing wrong action? And that's because he's enabled us with free will. And free will allows us to act according to our own intellect, our own desire nature. And from that free will, we learn ultimately what works for us and what does not work. If you do things that are wrong, things come back to you. That is the law of karma. And so this is constantly in action. And you are the receiver of those things that you have projected out from yourself. And sometimes, particularly when we do wrong things, we don't like it. And we may not remember the action that we once took that has reverberated back to us now and is now resonating as our own life experience. And just because things are going smoothly is not proof you do not have any negative reverberations coming your way. Everything happens in a season, in its own time, in its own place. I have experienced many times when I thought perhaps I was above that law of karma, and I did things that in my heart I knew was not right. But it seemed like I got away with it for some time. When I was a young boy, I didn't want to be caught doing bad things, so I would lie about them. And invariably, I was usually caught as a result. But it didn't stop me from trying it on again and again, trying to get away with things. And once we realize that there is no getting away from things, then in your mind, you can just simply think, all right, everything that I think, everything that I feel, everything that I desire is broadcast out. It's like going on to the headlines of the newspapers. And because it's doing so, everyone and everything knows about it. Now, it doesn't mean you need to go out and broadcast everything. This is not correct either, because people will take things that you say and they may use it against you, and it doesn't produce a good. That is why we can tell the guru everything, because the guru only wants our highest good. That's all that the guru wants. And so in telling the guru, they never use it for us in a negative or an evil way. It is simply for what will produce the highest good in a situation. So this is something that we act as if everything that we do will be shouted from the rooftops, as Jesus said. And as a result of that, it's amazing when you bring things out into the light of day, so to speak. When you act as if what you are thinking and feeling and wanting is known to one and all. And so oftentimes it dissipates the negativity Because when you think that everybody knows this, and you bring it out into the light of day, it loses its power. Things of darkness only want to be done in darkness. That's why it wants to hide itself and not broadcast itself. So by broadcasting it, you dissipate its power of evil, of wrong intention, of wrongdoing. So this is a wonderful practice to be able to put upon yourself and to act as if all those interior things are being broadcasted and known by the masters, by God, by all the world. There's nothing that can be done in secret, nothing at all. I wanted to read to you also from the posting from today. It is very interesting reviewing Mother's talks as we have been going through her transcripts from the 1980s. In thinking back over Mother's life, there are definite hallmarks that stand out. Taking incarnation on Christmas Day, 1904, meeting Master, 1925, Mother being made minister in Yogacharya, 1948 and 1951, Master leaving the body, 1952. Mother attaining Nirvikalpa Samadhi and meeting Papa and going to Anandashram, 1954 and 1957. Returning to India, 1967. Attaining Sahaja Samadhi, 1970. And going to India again, 1978. And then traveling to South Sea Islands, Australia and New Zealand in 1981. And entering into what I have called a second mystical crucifixion. Then there was her Mahasamadhi at the beginning of 1991. These broad strokes of Mother's life give a wide-angle view of a life lived in service to God and Guru. One may also look at significant moments in Mother's life, the fine brushstrokes in her life portrait, such as when she came to service one Sunday and she said that God had revealed to her the famous missing link in Darwin's evolution idea. The missing link being that there is no evidence for an evolutionary transition from lower species to humans. Mother said that God showed her this link from animal to human occurs in the astral realm and cannot be explained by simple genetic jumps. Or when Mother stood up, as Elizabeth Hike had said to her, and proclaimed, "I am that I am." And the wonderful experience Mother had in doing this significant action that freed her once and for all from thinking she was insignificant. Then there was the moment when Mother confirmed with the fully realized Master, Swami Ramdas, the revelation that God had given her. The scriptures are, in reality, the story of every man's evolution from the human to the divine. As Swami Satchidananda commented, it was a moment of great truth. Every life may be seen from its broad strokes all the way down to its micro moments of decisions, actions, and revelations. Mother's life took many unexpected turns to both herself and those around her. God's will can seem so inscrutable at the time, and it may take the perspective of generations to appreciate what has been accomplished. Jesus' life looked like a disaster at its end. He was horribly killed, disciples fled in every direction. To the Sadducees and Romans, it was only a tiny blip at the time. And then for hundreds of years, small groups of followers met in secret. All but one of the 12 disciples were killed for their beliefs. Jesus' life and death did not look like much at the time. Much less did it have the appearance of being a world-changing event. And those micro-moment decisions, how they affect so many. Master returned to India in 1935. Then he considered not coming back to America. He wrote to Rajasi that he was in a fix. If it were not for Rajasi and a few others, Master would not return. How we have all benefited from the fact that God prompted Master to continue his work here. When Papa left hearth and home to follow God's will by becoming a sannyasin, and when Mataji left her home to be with Papa amid storms of criticism, so many decisions made in the moment upon which the world turns, and we are all thus benefited. I remember being at a Vincent van Gogh museum in Amsterdam. A guide explained how his pictures are made up of so many tiny dots. When you stand close to the painting, you see many, many fine colored points that do not really make sense. Then, as you take steps away from the picture, those dots begin to coalesce into flowers, rivers, trees, reflections in water. It all comes together into a beautiful portrait. Who could have known this when seeing only tiny strokes of color up close? In this way, we may see our lives as so many little actions and decisions throughout the day. Those little decisions may seem insignificant on their own, but when those tiny dots of action, without those tiny dots of action, there would be no larger picture when we step back to see what has been created. God has taken me on many adventures in this life, some of which were inexplicable at the time, even contrary to what I thought should have happened. Yet, from the perspective of a few steps removed, those decisions, actions, and revelations create pictures that illumine His plan. Even those things I thought were mistakes at the time all add up to something beautiful for God. When mistakes equal learning, and learning produces growth, then even what does harm in the moment can be made to serve a higher good in the end. Those crazy dots not only make the picture interesting, but the darkly shadows makes the brightness all the more brilliant. God has, in recent years, certainly led me on a journey that was much different than I would have thought beforehand. He took me on a proposed circumambulation around North America, only to be interrupted by illness. Then, after this delay, on around the continent, not so much to see people, although this too was part of the journey, but majorly to see nature's and man-made cathedrals. Now he has made his travel to the southwest deserts, seemingly away from you. He does not have me seek out people connections, but seems intent on nature's cathedrals and most of all to be inwardly communing with him. Now, this inward communion can and does take place anywhere and everywhere. So why does he bring me here? It is a mystery. Outwardly, I can sit to read a book, but I spend an hour lifted up in him and barely read a page. He draws me unto himself. I merge into his being and through him with all of you. Those are the dots, and through the dots he is painting his masterpiece. O Ram, O Lord, you alone know the ins and outs of your plan. You alone can know what you are creating and why. I know that you only do good. So, in being in you, your will brings about the highest good for all. Meanwhile, each dot, each moment is lived in you and is keeping your will. That I know. This surrender to God's will. In the beginning, we do take up the law. Moses gave the law and was known as the lawgiver. He gave the Ten Commandments, and of course there were many, many other prescriptions for how to live besides that. But he is known most famously for the Ten Commandments. And in the beginning, when we take up a religious life, when we take up a life that is geared towards finding God, we do look for reason to find the way to find out which is right and which is wrong. And it is tremendously helpful at that time. But as Papa says, at some point, we start to go beyond reason. Now, if you don't have intuition or you don't have it very steadily, you may not really understand what it is to follow God's direction on a moment-to-moment basis. And if the ego tries to pick that up, I remember there was a disciple of Master's who wrote about when Master asked him to start giving talks. And he said that he was to have a subject and then let God speak through him. And he got up in front of everybody. And perhaps he was nervous and nothing came out. And so finally he thought to himself, well, if God isn't doing it, then I need to do it. And of course, this is a huge mistake to go through. It would have been better for him not to say a word for the entire time. And perhaps an embarrassment to himself, perhaps Master would ask him never to give a talk again. But better for that, a human failure, than for the ego to take up the mantle and to start to speak, because it's difficult to recover then. It's a moment of test for the individual. There's a vast difference between when you speak and you try to figure out what to say and what to do. Maybe you write it all out in a script. Some preachers, I understand, do that. They will write out their entire sermon, and then they basically read the sermon. But when Mother asked me to give talks, she said this is the same thing that Master told her. Come up with a title, a few stories, because everybody likes stories. And then you turn it over to God, and you let Him speak through you. And it's not an easy thing to do. You get up in front of everybody, you have a title, you have a few stories, perhaps you have something in mind of what you're going to talk about. And then you do what exactly? And so I went inside, and suddenly an idea came, and I thought, well, this is God giving me an idea. And so I went with that idea, and then another idea. And then there were a flow of words, and suddenly I was more of a witness. I wasn't even thinking about ideas. I wasn't thinking about what I might say next or how to structure the talk. None of that. That's a very different part of the mind. Intuition began to flow through. Now, we can't have that intuition unless we've done work purifying the mind. I got to a certain point in my spiritual experiences where God was taking me through the dark night of the soul. And where before I had had almost continual connection and communion with God, now I had none. And it was a stark contrast, I can tell you. It's devastating to go through. And for 2 years I went through this time. And so I decided that I was not in any condition to be a minister during that time. I took a sabbatical. Because I knew from what Mother had taught that this was the dark night of the soul, that it was something that I had to go through, and I didn't know how long it was going to last, not at all. And so I had this complete absence of any feeling of God. I did the best that I could to stay on the path, to do what I knew to do. So I continued to meditate, I continued my kriya, I continued everything. And yet I had the devastation of not feeling God during that time. One of the things that does to you, it so strips you of everything that you call your own. There can come times when you are so filled up with God that there's a sense that, well, maybe I am this. Maybe I have got there. And then you have it all taken away from you, and there's no fooling anyone. You don't have it at all if God does not give it to you. And so I went through that long, long, dark period. We were in the desert recently, and I did see an absolutely beautiful color of brown, and also there were many blue and green plants. It was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And for the first time, I really saw with these outward eyes what I had seen with my inward vision when God began to take me out of that dark night. It was a gradual process, but for the first time that I felt Him, He gave me a vision, and in that vision, I was walking in a desert that had that beautiful soft brown, just like what I was seeing. It had lush plants, just like I was looking at. They were desert plants, but they were beautiful. The air that I smelled spring-like and clean and clear and fresh. And it all had the hallmark of God stamped upon it. And it was the first time in over a year and a half that I'd had any of this kind of feeling at all. And I just let out a cry. I'd been carrying so much inside of me, just trying to put one step in front of the other. And then God had me turn around, and I looked at what was behind me, and the sky was sooty black. The ground was broken as if earthquakes had cracked it all apart. And all the ground was charred black. And I thought, this is what I've been walking through. No wonder it's been such a terrible ordeal. And then I turned around, and here was this beautiful desert in front of me. Now this experience came, and then I went back, and I was largely devoid of God. But then God started coming to me, here and there, and then more often, and then in a cascade. And then people started to call me and ask me if I would come and if I would give talks. And it seemed like the right thing to do now because I was experiencing God. It's very interesting how that worked. They called me right out of the blue. Some people I didn't know at all. And so this is how it happened. And then God brought me back into service again. And somehow through this all, I didn't have any doubt that this is God who has taken me through these experiences. And this makes a tremendous difference, even though I felt that there was no experience of God at all at the time, in a living experience, you might say, in a living presence. Still, God was in my mind, and I trusted that God was taking me through these experiences and that He would take me through it. This is absolutely essential in whatever God takes us through, that we feel this is God who is guiding and directing this experience. Somehow Mother had that throughout all of her experiences, it seemed, and she too went through the dark night of the soul. But somehow she knew that this is God who is taking her through these experiences. And when you have that firmly in your mind, then you open yourself to His intuition. If you feel that you are isolated, alone, and that God is nowhere in sight, although that may be your experience, but in your mind you know that God is taking you through that experience, even if it's the absence of Himself. And through that connection that you make in your mind, He will continue to guide and direct you. You will not get lost. I have seen those who have gotten lost on the path, wonderful, sincere, advanced souls. One soul who is in the third level of her experience. And then she got drawn in because of her loneliness and because she didn't find life was satisfying. She was not surrendered completely. And as a result of that, she started drinking alcohol and started doing other things that she knew was not consistent with the teachings. And it began to affect her mind to the point where she could barely make sense when she spoke, and she would repeat the same things over and over again. Another individual who was very highly advanced and drew back also from that complete state of surrender. and ended up drawing the self back down into the astral realms, where there were astral battles and various difficulties that were never ending. And they were never ending because this is what that soul had accepted for herself instead of going all the way to God. Another who felt like the guru was not doing enough. And so that one left the guru and went with another. And that totally dedicated herself to that life and that other guru. And at the end, that guru abandoned that one. And she was so devastated, she is going to take her own life. And through God's grace, that didn't happen, fortunately. Now you can have judgment of any one of these people if you want to. But just know that the path is not so easy. And the tests that come to us can really hit us hard. So it's important that we understand that, because when the tests come to us, they'll be our tests. And somebody else's test, we may easily see through it and think, well, that should not be a problem, that should not be a difficulty. But that is not the case. When it is your own test, you see, it hits you in that soft spot, right in that area that you least want it, or maybe even expect it. I've had anger come up in a way that I had never been angry in this life. I've had desire nature come up in a way that it hit me like a steam locomotive. I've had so many oppositional forces come up. And I cannot say I handled them all perfectly all the time, not at all. What I did have is I had my focus upon my guru. I had surrendered to God and Guru. And because of that, God took me through these experiences and brought me out on the other side. Sometimes we think that our path should look like a movie and everything should be cleaned up and everything should just look so. And it gets much more intense than that. We get much more lonely than that. We find ourselves more lost than that. And as a result of that, we turn away from the light. And this we should never, ever, ever do. We should never turn away from that light, because once we do, it is like as if you are in a deep, deep cave. And you can see the mouth of the cave, but it is just a pinpoint of light. It's a great distance away. And as long as you keep your mind upon that point of light, you may have great obstacles to go through, but you will be drawn towards the mouth of the cave where you will come out into the daylight once again. But if through your fear or through confusion you turn away from that light, you can wander and completely lose connection with that light. And as a result of that, you're in real trouble then, because you have no idea which way to go. But we can always turn toward God and Guru. And even if we have rejected them at one point, there may be a waiting time, because that is our karma that comes in. There is a story of a man in India who went through many of these experiences of the Kundalini. And he had no guru, he had no one to help him. And in the midst of reading about his experiences, I asked God, why is this so? And God told me, and he said, because he rejected his guru in a previous lifetime. So now he has to go through these experiences without that help. He's getting silent help from the guru. Excuse me. But he's not aware of it. And he feels totally cut off and alone in this path. And indeed he did. And eventually he came through those experiences. And it's very, very difficult for him. It would have been so much better had he not rejected his guru at an earlier time. Excuse me. So this is a lesson that we've come to learn. And it is through these lessons, and sometimes they're hard, sometimes they're very tough. But if we stay true to the light, if we keep our mind upon God and Guru, then God will draw us through those experiences. They may not be easy. They may test us to the very nth of what we think we can do. And in that moment, it's quite beautiful from a spiritual perspective, because at that moment, we surrender ourselves to God, because we realize, of myself, I am nothing. I've expended everything that I am, everything I know to do, and nothing has worked. And then I give it all to God. God has arranged this many times for me, to the point where I finally realize that deep down in my soul, of myself I am nothing. It is the Lord who doeth the works. We can think this to ourselves. We can affirm it to ourselves. But until we have gone through that experience where we have completely expended ourselves, and then we've realized only God can solve this problem, until we have totally eradicated the ego, then we cannot truly come into that knowledge, into that wisdom and understanding, knowing that God is all and all in all. And when we do that, God truly does become our all and all in all. He is the first, He is the last, He is the Alpha and the Omega, and everything in between. His presence, His consciousness, His power, His bliss then flow through us, because we no longer block His entrance. Because that is the truth. We block His entrance. He is always giving to us. But when He finds a closed door, He does not force it open, because He has given us free will. So always remember this. With my free will, I surrender myself at Thy feet. I give myself to Thee, heart, mind, and soul, without reserve. And as we do so, and we learn that ultimate test, that ultimate lesson in surrender, then we truly do give ourselves over to the Infinite One. We merge into that presence, become one with it, and He with us. This is our journey. This is what we strive for. So learn that intuition that is God within you. Learn to value it above all other things. Learn to never reject it, no matter where it takes you. Because this is a great test. If it takes us someplace and it stirs up our fear, stirs up our imagination, stirs up counter-desire nature, and we think, I don't want that intuition, I don't want to take that step, then we are like that caver who loses sight of the mouth of the cave, and we wander in every direction except toward that light. And then we feel very sorry for ourselves, because we become very, very lost. But all we have to do is call out God's name. All we have to do is turn our attention towards Him and be willing to surrender to the light within, because that draws us into greater light. And greater light draws us into even greater light, until it purifies us, body, mind, heart, and soul. And we are His and He is ours. God's blessings to you, all His love, all His grace ever with you.